Hi, I'm Jay from JinxNavigator.com, and this is my podcast. We're making our way through all of the issues of The Jinx, which was a newsletter for magicians and mentalists that lasted from 1934 to 1941, and a lot of what we do as mystery performers can be traced back to something from The Jinx. This is the podcast where we browse through every issue and find out how many of the ideas are still usable. Spoiler alert, the answer is just about all of them. We're looking at issue number 19 today, which contains The Addition of the Age by Charles Nagel, Letters to the Jinx by Theodore Animan, Business Card Pictures by Theodore Animan, The Scarny Thought Card by John Scarny, Another Stop by Paul Curry, a version of the Al Baker Three Billet Trick by Theodore Animan, and The Editorial by Animan. All right, welcome to the editorial for issue number 19, where Animan is now 14 weeks into the road tour with the Green River Review. He opens with a genuine question to his readers. Is the free floor show model, where a touring review performs at nightclubs at no cost to the management, funded by a sponsor, is that a threat to working magicians who charge for their appearances? He's getting complaints from performers who think it undercuts the market. He doesn't have a firm position yet and wants to hear from readers. A nice practical idea surfaces early. For a living and dead test, yeah, you all know how I feel about those, use flash paper for the living names and ordinary heavy tissue for the dead one. All five slips go through the flames one at a time. Four vanish instantly. One survives. The survivor is, of course, the dead name, which seems that seems backwards to me. Okay. Nothing to it, Animan says, and the effect is very good. Now, I do like the idea of doing something like that. I, of course, hate the living and dead test theme, but using matching non-flash paper with flash paper for something like that is kind of cool. He has a few recommendations in this issue. Mystic Craig's book, The Elusive Canary, covers the vanishing birdcage thoroughly. Methods, a challenge routine, and even the care of the cage. Jean Hugard has also produced a new trick blindfold built on an entirely different principle from the usual fumbling methods. The Frank Lane dispute from last issue continues. Lane's reply eventually made it to Animan after being rejected by the linking ring, and Lane's new position is that the principle in question belongs to Stanyan, not Baker or Animan. Animan points out that in his 1934 book he used the very same principle and explicitly credited Stanyan for it, at which point he produces the citation and closes the argument. Two practical card ideas round out the editorial. A stacked deck can serve as a secret message carrier. Write a list along the edge of the square deck, shuffle, and the message is destroyed until the stack is restored. Animan wonders if anyone can find a use for this in a book test or similar effect. And a locator card can be made with nothing more than a soft pencil rubbed along the edges near the corners. Invisible from above, but catches the eye immediately when the deck is slightly tipped and fanned. He thinks it's original, though not a new principle. And he closes with a sharp note to dealers who have been writing comments in the margins of copies of The Jinx before shipping them to subscribers. He's reprinting a facsimile of one such defaced copy, and anyone who receives a marked-up issue should send it back to Animan for a replacement. The Addition of the Age is from Charles Nagel, and Animan says it took an old mathematical trick and remade it into something that fools people who already know the original. A 25-square grid is drawn. The helper calls out 5 2-digit numbers which go down the left side. The performer writes 5 more down the right side, apparently at random. The diagonal squares from corner to corner are left blank for now, and working from the numbers on both sides, the performer fills in the remaining squares, scattering the digits in what looks like a haphazard order. Then the helper fills in the empty diagonal row with whatever numbers that they choose. The performer immediately writes a total below the grid. Every vertical column adds up to either 9 or 18, and the total the helper was going to calculate is already written down correctly before anyone has added anything up. The method involves a complementary relationship between the two columns of numbers. The performer's right side quietly mirrors the helper's left in a way that locks the arithmetic in place, regardless of what goes in the diagonal. The one calculation the performer does is quick, it's done in the head, it's invisible to anyone watching. Animan presents it as a rapid calculation effect, and notes that the filling of the squares can be varied each time, so it never looks the same twice. Full details and the example diagram are at JinxNavigator.com. The next two things in this issue of the Jinx is a selection of reader letters and a page of business cards from back in the day. And you can see those at jinxnavigator.com. This one is from John Scarney. It's called the Scarney Thought Card, and it tackles a classic challenge in card magic: having a card merely thought of, not selected, not touched, and then finding it. Most methods for this involve several rounds of questioning, elimination, careful pumping or fishing of information. Scarney's approach cuts most of that away. The deck is held vertically and riffled so the cards flash by. The helper simply watches and thinks of one they see. You set the deck down, the helper cuts it, and then deals cards face down one at a time while counting silently to the number of their card. When they say stop, the card at that position is turned over, and of course, it's the one they thought of. The handling makes the selection feel completely free, and Scarney notes that with a little practice, the riffle through the deck can be timed so the cards of interest pass by clearly while the rest flash by too quickly to register. No hesitation, no stopping, no obvious force. The helper cuts the deck themselves and does the dealing themselves. Full details on this can be found at jinxnavigator.com. This one, another stop, is credited to Paul Curry, though Anneman notes somewhat sheepishly that he found it on an unmarked sheet in his files and isn't entirely certain of the source. If the actual originator sees this, he promises to make it right. The deck goes behind the performer's back. A helper calls stop at any point during a riffle. They note the card showing at that moment, then take the deck and shuffle it. No card was removed. The performer had no chance to do anything. Nevertheless, the performer names it. Curry's preferred presentation is to spread the deck face up and appear to read the helper's muscle reactions as the correct card is slowly approached, a muscle reading frame that keeps the method invisible even to people who know card work. The method uses a short card and a small setup that can be put in place in seconds. The short card acts as a landmark during the behind-the-back riffle, letting the performer do the dirty work, and you can find the details on this one at jinxnavigator.com. This one is from Anneman, a version of the Al Baker three-billet trick, and it comes with more personal history than almost anything else in the Jinx so far. The effect goes back 15 or 16 years to Al Baker, who originated a routine where three cards were selected by three different people, the names written on slips of paper and collected in a hat, and the performer revealed each card one at a time, apparently by divination. Anneman obtained the original method in 1924. By 1929, he had developed it further, adding billet switches that allowed the slips to be returned after being read. That same summer, Anneman spent time working out how a stacked deck could be shuffled by helpers without destroying its usefulness for the trick. It was a significant discovery for him, and he used it that winter to fool a lot of people who had no idea a stack was in play. When he later found the same principle described in a 1907 issue of Stanyan's Magic, he gave Stanyan the credit, as he points out in this issue's editorial. The version he describes here combines the stack with the billet handling to produce something that baffles card workers as well as lay people, because the card selections happen in a way that looks nothing like a stack trick, and the billet handling has enough twist that even attentive observers lose the thread. Three helpers each select or think of a card through three different procedures. Three slips are written and collected. The performer reveals all three one at a time, returning the slips as read, and saves the most impossible one for last. The card that was only thought of, never written, until after the performer had already begun to reveal it. Anneman closes by acknowledging that many readers will immediately try to find a way to eliminate the billets entirely and work purely from the stack. He's thought about it. He says there's no method that compares to having a spectator genuinely think of a card, and that point alone is what makes a trick worth doing the way it's described. Full details on a version of the Al Baker three-billet trick are at jinxnavigator.com. That's it for this episode of the Jinx Navigator podcast. To see every article in every issue of the Jinx, go to jinxnavigator.com and sign up. It's completely, absolutely free. Use the contact form on that site and let me know what you think of the podcast, good or bad. I'm Jay Jennings from jinxnavigator.com. And I hope you join me again next time when we explore issue 20, which includes a coin effect by Conrad Busch called Silver or Copper. And I thank you in advance for helping spread the word about this, the Jinx Navigator podcast. See you next week.